wide corridor, though there had been some there only a few moments earlier.
"Gone back to fight for the throne of Gontalgrim," Brunner explained.
"And what now for us?" Drizzt asked. Jarlaxle seemed as if he was about to answer, but like all the others, he deferred to Brunner.
"We go on,"
Brunner said, and marched ahead, Athrogate hustling to keep beside him.
"He seems very sure of himself,"
Dahlia remarked to Drizzt and Jarlaxle as the dwarves stomped off,
"with every turn and every side passage."
It was true enough, and while Drizzt held faith in his friend, and really what choice did they have, he was more than a bit concerned. Near to the audience chamber the passages had been clear and undamaged, or no more so than Jarlaxle, Athrogate, and Dahlia had remembered them. But soon after the five companions had descended the first long stairwell, they had found more ruin and rubble. Corridors had twisted and cracked apart, and the second stair Brunner had led them to had proven impassable. But the dwarf remained undaunted and took them off on an alternate route. Drizzt didn't know what magic might have been in that throne, but he hoped it was truly a memory of Gontalgrim, not some deception placed in his mind by their enemies, as had been done to Athrogate. Jarlaxle moved ahead to watch over the dwarves.
"You fought well in that canyon," Drizzt remarked quietly.
Dahlia arched her eyebrow at him.
"I always fight well. It is why I am alive."
"You fight often, then," Drizzt said with a slight smirk.
"When I have to."
"Perhaps you're not as charming as you believe."
"I don't have to be,"
Dahlia replied without missing a beat.
"I fight well."
"The two are not mutually exclusive."
"With yourself as evidence, I am sure," Dahlia replied.
She pressed on faster, leaving an amused Drizzt in her wake.
"Every tunnel!"
the Ashmedai commander cried as the whole of his group shrank back toward the entrance that had brought them into the room. The colorless forms of ghost dwarves flooded into the circular hall from every one of the exits in front of them, forming ranks with all the discipline of a living army.
"Can they touch us? Can they hurt us?"
one woman asked, her teeth chattering, for indeed the room became very cold.
"They can tear you apart," Dorcray assured them. "Then we fight!"
the commander cried, and all around him gave a rousing battle cheer. All except for Dorcray, who was thinking that it might be time for him to take the form of a bat and fly away. And except for Valindra, who began to laugh wildly, loudly, and so hysterically that the cheering died away bit by bit, each Ashmedai voice going silent as a new set of eyes fell upon the lich.
"Fight them?"
Valindra asked, when at last she commanded the attention of all. She began to cackle again, uncontrollably, it seemed. She brought forth her emaciated hand, palm up, closed her eyes, and her laughter became a chant. The Ashmedai circled behind her, ready to run away, having seen the destructive power of her magic. But no fireball filled the room. Instead, a scepter appeared in her hand. At a cursory glance, it looked much like those carried by the Ashmedai, and that brought more cheers. But as each of them came to view Valindra's scepter more closely, those cheers turned to gasps. The Ashmedai scepters, their staff spears, were red in color when first presented, but that hue wore away with time and use, and most held weapons of uneven hue, more pink than red. But not the scepter Valindra held. It was ruby, and not just in color. It seemed to have been carved of one giant gemstone, rich red, its color so fluid and deep that several of the nearby Ashmedai held forth their arms, as if they meant to sink their fingers right into it. Valindra grasped it powerfully and thrust it horizontally above her head, and its ends flared with a powerful red light.
"Who is your master?"
she cried. Confused, the Ashmedai glanced around at each other, some mouthing,
"Asmodeus,"
others quietly and questioningly asking,
"Valindra?"
"Who is your master?"
Valindra yelled, her voice magically magnified to fill the chamber and echo about the stones, the ends of the scepter flaring again in response to her cry.
"Asmodeus!"
the commander yelled back, and the others followed his lead.
Pray to him,
Valindra ordered. The fanatic scrambled to form a kneeling circle around the lich, and each looped his right arm over the shoulders of the person to his right, left arms reaching high for the amazing scepter. They began to chant, and their circle began to slowly rotate to the left as they crawled on the hard stone. From a few steps back, Dorcray watched it all with blank amazement. He knew that scepter. Zas-Tam had kept it back in Thay, knowing well that it was the most treasured artifact of the Ashmedai. Dorcray had suspected all along that Sylora Somm had brought it west with her, given that almost the entire cult of Ashmedai had come to Neverwinter Wood, and given their complete obedience to her. When Valindra had joined their ranks those years ago, Sylora's power over the lich had only confirmed that suspicion. Dorcray could hardly believe that Sylora had given the scepter to Valindra, to that unstable and powerful undead creature. Dorcray shook those thoughts away. It was not the time. His warriors were on their knees, and the dwarves fast approached. "Valindra!" he called to warn her, but she, too, was deep into her chanting, and she seemed not to hear. "Valindra, they come!" the vampire yelled, but again the lich made no sign that she heard him. The nearest ghosts took on a reddish hue as they came within the wide glow of the ruby scepter, and Dorcray noted that they seemed to hesitate there, their faces twitching with discomfort, pain even. Smoke began to pour from the scepter's ends, circling between Valindra and the closest dwarves, swirling across the stone floor and sinking lower, as if reaching into the rock itself. The stone melted, liquefied, red bubbles forming and popping, releasing acrid yellow smoke into the air. As one, the ghosts stopped and threw up their hands, shielding their eyes. Through the floor it came, as if standing up in a shallow pond. The large head appeared first, spiked and crested with rows of jagged red bone. Hooked black horns reached out to either side and curved upward and over, where they narrowed into points facing each other. Wide eyes showed no pupils, pits of fire and nothing more, the eyes of an angry devil. A wide mouth curled back in a perpetual hiss, revealing huge canines and rows of teeth that could tear flesh from bone with ease. Taller it climbed, as if scaling a ladder in the molten floor, its glorious, naked body coming forth from the lava with not a scratch or burn, its red, leathery wings spreading wide as they came free of the hole. The whole of the creature was red, hot like the fires of all nine hells, its skin stretched over corded muscles and rows of bone. Black spikes lined its back in a sharp ridge, narrowing at the base of its spine, where they gave way to a flashing red tail, barbed in a black tip and dripping lethal venom. The long claws of its hands, too, shone black, like polished obsidian. In its right hand it held a gigantic mace, obsidian black and with a four-bladed head, each side a cleaver in and of itself. Smoke wafted from that weapon, and an occasional lick of flame appeared along its angry head. Finally, the fiend stepped from the bubbling pool, a huge, clawed foot scraping down upon solid stone, black claws screeching. The beast wore only a green loincloth, set with an iron skull in front. Black leathery bracers tied tight around its muscular forearms, and macabre jewelry, a necklace of skulls, human-sized but seeming smaller on the 8-foot-tall devil, and more skulls tied around its thrashing tail. The Ashmedai wailed and prostrated themselves, face down, not daring to look upon the glorious devil. It was not Asmodeus, of course, for to dare to even try to summon that one would have brought ruin upon them all. But Dorcray's estimation of Valindra jumped mightily at that terrible, glorious moment, and truly he felt the fool forever doubting Sylora Somm. With the scepter, Valindra had called deep into the nine hells, and she had been heard. Dorcray was no student of devil kin, but like anyone else who had spent time with dark wizards, he knew the primary beings of the lower planes. Valindra had been heard indeed, and she had been granted for her efforts the services of a pit fiend, one of the personal servants of the devil god, a duke of the nine hells, answerable only to the unspeakable arch-devils themselves. The beast surveyed its ghostly enemies, then half turned to regard Valindra and the groveling Ashmedai. It reached out with its long arm toward the scepter, clawed fingers grasping for the item. And again Dorcray thought it was surely time for him to leave, but the pit fiend didn't take the scepter from Valindra. Instead, it seemed to lend her its powers to be funneled through the item. The scepter glowed more brightly, and Dorcray had to turn his shoulder and throw his elbow up high, bringing his cloak up to shield his face. He, too, was an undead thing. So many times had the vampire dominated unsuspecting humans, the weak-willed who would give in to his demands. But he realized in that moment the horror of his former victims. Despite himself, he was on his knees. He found that he could not look upon the pit fiend any longer, and he buried his face in his hands and bent to kiss the floor. Trembling, helpless, he could only die again right then and there. There was no escape. There was no hope.
"Dorcray," he heard,
more in his thoughts than his ears, as Valindra reached out to him, her voice thin and far, far away.
"Dorcray, arise,"
she ordered. The vampire dared to look up. Valindra still stood as she had, the scepter thrust up above her, its ends emitting wave after wave of energetic red light. The pit fiend stood before her now, having let go of the artifact, and the scepter itself seemed greatly diminished, as the Duke of Devils seemed greatly enhanced. Dorcray's pain subsided, as did his hopelessness. He dared rise to his knees, then to his feet.
"The Primordial's minions will not recognize that we also wish its release," the vampire warned. "And there is the dragon, the red dragon from the depths below."
Valindra smiled at him and shrugged, as all around her the Ashmedai struggled to their feet, and the vampire wondered if Valindra had called to each of them, individually and by name, and somehow all at once.
"Lead on, the Ultima Touche,"
the lich said. With the pit fiend thus leading, the procession moved past the writhing mass of prostrated dwarf ghosts, the creatures squirming in agony, and stalked out of the chamber. The Ashmedai said nothing, but the looks on their faces spoke of awe and wonderment and elation. But no such feelings washed through Dorcray. He had known wizards to summon beings of the lower planes, usually minor demons or imps. He had heard of those who had dared bring forth more powerful minions, demons and devils, or elementals. Those attempts at summoning greater servants had not typically ended well. He looked at the scepter, the source of the power for the summoning, and knew instinctively that the bulk of its stored energy had been spent in bringing forth the devil, a mighty devil that had to be tightly controlled. Pit fiends were servants only to the arch-devils themselves, and now, it seemed, a servant to Valindra Shadowmantle. But for how long? Chapter 21 The Heritage, The Fate. Drizzt leaned against the wall of a defensive alcove along the 10-foot-wide corridor. Dahlia stood across the way in a similar alcove. They heard the pursuit and knew it to be elemental minions of the Primordial. The drow glanced back the other way, where the corridor spilled into a square room, its door too broken to be used to slow the pursuing beasts.
"Hurry," Drizzt whispered, aiming the remark at Brunner and the others.
Brunner had determined that that particular room held the first installation for one of the magical bowls, one of the magical connections to the tendrils of the host tower. Drizzt glanced along the corridor at the many metal placards evenly spaced along the wall, all decorated with various dwarven images, and none with an apparent clue as to which might be the correct choice. Then a noise back down the corridor brought Drizzt from his thoughts. He glanced across at Dahlia and nodded. The woman, holding her tri-staff, eagerly grinned back at him. That grin disappeared almost at once, though, and Dahlia lifted her hand and worked her fingers through an intricate series of movements.
"Your sword."
Drizzt looked down at his belted scimitar, Icing Death, and discerned at once the cause of her concern. At the crease where the blade's hilt sat on the scabbard, a line of blue light glowed. Icing Death always had a bluish tint to it, and often glowed more powerfully, particularly when facing a creature of fire. The scimitar was one of the ancient frost bands, after all, a weapon built to battle creatures of fire, a weapon hungry for fire elemental blood. But Drizzt had never seen it glow while in its scabbard. He grasped the hilt and brought it forth just a bit, and his alcove was bathed in blue light. He slid it back into the scabbard and took a deep breath and told himself that it was just because of the nearness of the ultimate of fire creatures, the primordial. He looked back at Dahlia and lifted his hand to respond, but before he did, he realized something quite amazing and unexpected. Dahlia had spoken to him in the intricate drow hand cant. Drizzt had never met anyone other than a drow who could use that sign language. "How do you know the cant?" he flashed back at her. Dahlia's pretty face screwed up as she tried, unsuccessfully, it seemed, to follow his movements. "Slowly," Drizzt signed, "you speak as a drow." Dahlia held her hand out horizontally and wagged it back and forth, indicating that she only had a cursory knowledge of the language. She ended with a self-deprecating grin and shrug. Drizzt was impressed anyway. Few who were not drow, who were not trained from their earliest days at the academy, could form even the most rudimentary words in the intricately coded language. Down in the corridor, a door banged open, and Dahlia tightened against the wall, her hands ringing on her magical staff. Drizzt slid an arrow out of his enchanted quiver and set it to Talmaril's string. He crouched down on one knee and peeked out into the corridor to see a host of red-skinned salamanders slithering down his way. "Be quick, dwarf," Jarlaxle said, glancing nervously at the hallway door. "I do believe our enemies are fast upon us." Brunner gave a hearty harumph and stood with his hands on his hips, staring at the chamber's side wall. No less than 10 metal placards lined that wall, with an equal number across the way. "Just pull 'em all," Athragate prodded. Brunner shook his head. "Gotta be the right one. Rest are trapped and sure to kill ye dead." Athragate had neared one of the plates as Brunner spoke, and was even reaching out for one. He retracted his hand quickly, though, and sucked in his breath, turning to look back at Brunner. Brunner pointed 2 placards down from where Athragate stood.
"That one."
"Ye for certain?"
"Aye,"
Brunner said, and Athragate moved that way. He hooked his fingers on the plate and pulled, but nothing happened. Cries erupted out in the hallway. Athragate grabbed on harder and tugged with all his considerable strength, but the plate would not budge. He let go with a growl and hopped back, spat in both hands and moved in again, or started to, until Brunner intervened. The dwarf king walked up to the placard, reached up with one hand, and began talking in a language that sounded like dwarvish, so much so that it took Athragate several moments to realize that he couldn't really understand a word Brunner was saying. Brunner gave a slight tug, and the placard, the door to the secret compartment, swung open.
"How in the 9 hells?" Athragate complained.
"Tied to the throne's magic?" Jarlaxle wondered aloud. The drow was fast to Brunner's side to set the bowl on the base of the deep, narrow compartment. He fumbled with his sack for just a moment before producing a small vial, which he handed to the dwarf. "To enact the magic of the bowl," the drow began. But Brunner held up his hand to silence his companion. He knew how to do it. Somehow he knew the words. He pulled the stopper from the small vial and poured the magical water into the bowl, then gently began swishing it around and chanting softly. The water seemed to multiply as it swirled around the shallow bowl, growing in volume and in shape. Its form rose up above the rim of the bowl like a watery humanoid swelling with power, and for a moment it seemed outraged at being called from its home plane. It continued to swell until it was too large to fit in the alcove, growing out of the hole and towering over the dwarf. Jarlaxle walked back, and Athragate called out a warning to Brunner and pulled out his morning stars, though how they might do damage to such a creature he did not know. But Brunner remained unbothered. He had brought this creature through the magic of the bowl, and he commanded it. He reached right past the elemental as if it were no more bothersome than a potted plant, and slid the bowl deeper into the alcove. He pointed down the narrow tunnel, willing the elemental to retreat into the darkness, for at the other end of that compartment lay an open tendril of the host tower, a place designed to be filled by just such a creature. The elemental swelled in protest, and thick, arm-like appendages reached out to either side, great watery fists ready to pound at Brunner. But the dwarf just growled and pointed, compelling the elemental to obey. As soon as it retreated into the hole, Brunner grabbed for the placard. He paused for a moment to consider the sounds within the alcove like the breaking waves of a seashore. He took a deep breath then, revealing his relief that the creature had indeed followed his command, and he closed the placard and turned to find Jarlaxle guarding by the door. "We must be on our way," the drow called to him, but Brunner shook his head.
"The second one's in here," the dwarf explained, pointing to the opposite wall. Out in the hall, the tumult grew.
"Oh, good dwarf, do be quick," Jarlaxle said, and he drew out a pair of slender wands and moved to the wall at the side of the door. One after another, Tolmeril the Heartseeker let fly, arrows trailing silver lightning as they shot off down the corridor. Crouched on one knee, Drizzt leaned out of the alcove and kept up the barrage as long as he could, dropping salamanders with every shot, sometimes two for one mighty arrow, and once even three. But the losses only seemed to infuriate the monstrous creatures, and Drizzt knew he couldn't drive them all away. They were fighting for the primordial, for their god. The bodies piled in the corridor, but more salamanders slithered over them, and when the drow cut those down, the enraged creatures behind used a different tactic, pushing the pile in front of them instead of scrambling over it. The drow grimaced and kept shooting. What else could he do? He drew back Tolmeril's bowstring as far as he could and let fly into the center mass, the lightning arrows drilling holes into the pile and jolting bodies, occasionally breaking through to sting at the living elemental kin behind. The press continued, though, and Drizzt was about to put Tolmeril up and draw his swords when a pair of true lightning bolts shot down the corridor from behind him, startling him, blinding him temporarily, and forcing him back into the alcove. He came to the edge and peered around quickly to see a jumble of body parts, blackened and smoking, salamanders scrambling behind the blasted front ranks to rebuild their moving wall. Drizzt went back to efficient work again with his deadly bow. Behind him, from the doorway of the room, Jarlaxle put his wands to use once more, angling the twin lightning bolts up high so they would rebound off the ceiling and dive down behind the wall of salamander corpses.
"Glob it," Drizzt cried, for lack of a better word.
"Clear," Jarlaxle yelled back, and Drizzt fell into the alcove. A glob of green paste flew past him to strike the floor right in front of the corpse wall. But still the salamanders came on, tearing asunder their macabre fortification and rushing over. A flying wall of spears led their charge, skipping and bouncing around the corridor.
"They're close," Dahlia called from across the wall.
"Follow the line," Jarlaxle yelled from the doorway, and a double flash, 1-2 of lightning, rumbled past the pair, the reports shaking the stones.
"Now!"
Dahlia shouted as soon as the blasts had shot past, and she leaped out into the corridor, brandishing her tri-staff. Swords in hand, Drizzt joined her, and just in time to flash Icing Death out to his right in front of Dahlia and deflect a thrown trident. The monsters pressed in three abreast, stabbing furiously at drow and elf. Drizzt's scimitars worked in circles in front of him, parrying every thrust, sometimes one, sometimes two, depending on the target of the middle creature. The reach of those long spears and tridents prevented him from going forward behind any parries, though. He didn't want to surrender his position beside Dahlia. Together they formed a mighty defensive wall, and more than merely defensive, Drizzt realized, as they fell into a side-by-side rhythm. Dahlia's amazing staff, sometimes whole, sometimes twin bowstaves, sometimes a tri-staff, sometimes a pair of flails, afforded her all kinds of varying reaches and counters. Drizzt worked more pointedly on defense, easily picking off the strikes of the salamander directly in front of him, and executing continuous blocks on the one in the middle as well.
"Aye!"
Dahlia cried, apparently understanding his intent, and she dropped back one step as Drizzt shot by sidelong, deflecting spear after trident in rapid succession. Wall to wall the drow worked, his feet a blur as he sidestepped, his hands a blur as he worked his blades to deflect any and every attack. He went back into his left and heard a snap beside him. Yet another incarnation of Dahlia's amazing weapon, four equal lengths of stick, joined end to end in a line so that she used them almost like a whip. And to great effect, as the salamander on Drizzt's far right discovered, the end pole turning over powerfully and perfectly to knock a hole in its forehead. Even as it fell dead, a spear flew in from the next in line, but Drizzt was there with a clean deflection as Dahlia reeled in her staff. He worked back the other way quickly, leaving no hole in their defense. Over! Dahlia called from behind him. And he instinctively ducked, just as the warrior elf pole-vaulted over him, landing lightly on her feet inside the reach of spear and trident. Even as she landed, though, her staff whole and cumbersome in the tight quarters, she yelled, "Over!" again. Her leap had been a diversion and nothing more. She went up again, vaulting backward. Three spears reached high to chase her, but none caught its mark. Drizzt went quickly forward, under Dahlia, appearing as if out of nowhere in the midst of the salamanders. His scimitars flashed left, right, and a devastating double stab in the middle, slashing the beasts aside. Then he blocked a thrown spear, and a second, and a third, and more creatures charged up with shields as if they meant to bull-rush him back toward the room. "Over! Bow!" Dahlia yelled. And Drizzt didn't quite understand how that might work out. He didn't question her, though, and simply fell back in a roll as Dahlia planted the end of her staff beside him and went up high. He angled his tumble for the alcove and sheathed his blades and scooped up Talmaril as he came around, immediately setting an arrow. Dahlia had not come down. She remained up high, hand grasping the top end of the planted 8-foot staff, feet kicking out repeatedly, unpredictably, and wildly at her enemies. Even when they managed to get a shield in her path, she merely stomped her foot on it and used it to maintain the high ground. And Drizzt started shooting under her, his arrows clipping under the upraised shield of one, tearing through the creature's torso and blasting clean through the shield of the one beside it. Dahlia let out a cry and kicked hard against a shield, throwing herself backward as spears arced up at her from behind the nearest row of creatures. She came down in a controlled roll beside Drizzt, her eyes wide. "Just run," she told him. And before he could ask her why, she scampered away toward the room. Another arrow flashed away, and another, and Drizzt had to fall into the alcove to avoid a wall of thrown spears. He came right back to shoot some more, though, thinking to cover Dahlia's retreat. But when he popped back out, he saw the ranks of his enemies thinned, salamanders diving aside and pressing against the wall to clear a path. And Drizzt saw what Dahlia had seen from up high. And the same thought, "Just run," came screaming to mind.
"Two," Brunner announced, sliding the second bowl deep into its alcove and shutting the placard after it.
From behind the metal door they heard the rush of water as the elemental tapped into the tendrils of the host tower. The dwarf nodded in satisfaction and declared,
"2 of 10!
"Be quick and lead on," Jarlaxle bade him, words that hardly seemed necessary, given the ruckus in the corridor just beyond the broken door. All three, Brunner, Jarlaxle, and Athrogate, turned and looked that way then, to see Dahlia diving into the room in a soaring somersault. She planted her staff just to the side as she rolled farther in and pushed off, throwing herself out the other way, away from the three onlookers.
"What?"
was all Brunner managed to say before a great rush of flames poured through the door with a dark form, Drizzt, within them, being carried along by the sheer force of the blast. The drow landed in a short run as the flames dissipated and looked to his friends, wisps of smoke rising from his cloak, Talmaril in one hand, Icing Death in the other, glowing fiercely.
"Oh, joy," Drizzt deadpanned. "They have a dragon."
Brunner's eyes went wide, as did his mouth, as did Athrogate's features as well, and both let out a howl and ran off for the backside of the room, Dahlia angling to join them. Jarlaxle put another lightning bolt into the open doorway for good measure, and wisely launched another magical glob into the opening as well, thinking to slow the pursuit. That sticky substance caught a trio of flying spears as an added benefit.
"Two elementals in place," Jarlaxle assured Drizzt, when the pair came together, bringing up the rear of the retreat. "8 more and we're nearly done."
Drizzt didn't glance back, focusing instead on Brunner, who stood in the exit at the far end of the room, ready to slam the heavy door.
"You heard me when I told you they have a dragon," the drow replied, and he shook his head and glanced back.
"Not a large one," the other drow replied.
Drizzt was still shaking his head as they passed by Brunner, who slammed the heavy stone door behind them. Nearby stood Athrogate, a heavy iron locking bar in hand, and the two dwarves had the portal quickly secured.
"I seen cooked cow. I seen cooked sow," Athrogate sang, "now thinking for sure that I be seeing cooked drow. But ye don't smell roasted, and ye don't look toasted, and it's making me ask meself, how now, drow? Bwahaha!"
A fine question, if asked stupidly, Jarlaxle concurred as the troops started swiftly away. Drizzt didn't answer. He sprinted out in front of the other four, taking up the point, slinging Tolmeril over his shoulder as he went and drawing out his second scimitar.
"Damned good blade," Brunner explained to the other three a short while later.
"Icing death," Jarlaxle realized, catching on.
"Damned sword kept the flames away," Athrogate asked.
"Carried it once as I rode a burning dragon," Brunner remarked.
"A burning dragon?" Athrogate asked, at the same time Jarlaxle fell astride behind and silently mouthed the exact same three words.
"I cooked it meself."
The drow mercenary could only smile then and shake his head, knowing better than to disbelieve any of the outrageous stories those two old adventurers, Drizzt O'Erden and Brunner Battlehammer, might tell. His grin disappeared as he looked ahead to Drizzt, though, seeing even in the way the drow moved the edge that had come to him. Drizzt had often seemed the carefree fighter, enjoying the battle, and Jarlaxle couldn't deny the charm of that. But whatever remained of that carefree attitude had changed, and not subtly. Perhaps it was barely discernible to one who did not know the truth of Drizzt O'Erden, but for Jarlaxle in particular, the change glared at him. He excused himself from the dwarves and Dahlia and quick-stepped far ahead to catch up to Drizzt. "One battle after another," he remarked. Drizzt nodded and seemed bothered not at all. "But all worth it because of the good we might accomplish here, yes?" Jarlaxle added. Drizzt looked at him as if he was insane and replied,
"I have spent half a century in search of this place for the sake of my friend."
"And you care not that our work here may save a city?" Drizzt shrugged.
"Have you been to Luskan lately?"
Jarlaxle shook that comment off and asked, "Would you have come here if not for Brunner?" A flash of anger spiked in Drizzt's eyes, and Jarlaxle didn't wait for an answer. He charged into Drizzt, grabbing him by the front of his leather vest and driving him back up against the wall.
"Damn you to Loth's webs," he said. "Don't you dare pretend it doesn't matter to you."
"Why do you care?" Drizzt growled back at him, and he reached up to pull Jarlaxle's hands aside.
But so angry was Jarlaxle that he growled through that attempt and pressed all the harder.
"No one who has ever made a difference," he asked, his face barely an inch from Drizzt's. Drizzt stared at him.
"That is what you said back in the Cutlass. How you described yourself to me, no one who has ever made a difference." Jarlaxle closed his eyes and finally let go, stepping back.
"Do you believe that?" he asked more calmly.
"What do you want from me, son of Beenri?"
"Just the truth, your truth. You believe that you have never made a difference?"
"Perhaps there is no difference to be made," Drizzt replied, and he seemed to be spitting every word.
"None permanent, you mean?" Drizzt considered that for a moment, then nodded his acceptance of the caveat. "Because they all die anyway," Jarlaxle went on. "Catty Bree, Regis." Drizzt snorted and shook his head, and started off down the corridor, but Jarlaxle caught him by the shoulder and pushed him back against the wall, and so full of anger was Jarlaxle's face that Drizzt's hand went to the hilt of his scimitar.
"Do not ever say that," Jarlaxle said to him, spittle flying with every word.
Drizzt's hands came up inside Jarlaxle's grasp, and as the mercenary began to loosen his grip, Drizzt shoved him back.
"Why do you care?"
Drizzt asked.
"Because you were the one who escaped," Jarlaxle replied.
Drizzt looked at him as though he had no idea what Jarlaxle could possibly be talking about.
"Don't you understand?" Jarlaxle went on.
"I watched you. We all watched you. Whenever a matron mother, or almost any female of Menzo Berenzon was about, we spoke your name with vitriol, promising to avenge Loth and kill you."
"You've had your chance at that,"
Jarlaxle went on, as if Drizzt had said nothing.
"But whenever they were not around, the name of Drizzt Do'Urden was spoken with jealousy, often reverence. You do not understand, do you? You don't even recognize the difference you've made to so many of us in Menzo Berenzon."
"How? Why?"
"Because you were the one who escaped."
"You are here with me," Drizzt argued. "Are you bound to the City of Spiders by anything more than your own designs? By breaking the earth?"
"I'm not talking about the city, you obstinate fool," Jarlaxle replied, his voice lowering.
Again, Drizzt looked at him at a loss.
"The heritage,"
Jarlaxle explained.
his voice lowered still as they heard the approach of the others. The fate.
Chapter 22 Parallel Passageways. Great columns lined the hall, evenly spaced in three long rows. Each was in itself a work of art, a product of the labors of 100 dwarf craftsmen. Each column was uniquely decorated, personally touched and carved with great love. Even the centuries of dust that had settled there couldn't hide the majesty of the place. Walking through it, the five companions, particularly Brunner and Athrogate, could well imagine the gatherings that had once been held there. The awakening of the primordial had caused considerable damage, but much of the glory that had once been Gontalgrim remained intact. They had passed through dozens of chambers and along many stairways and corridors, with doors that opened into mansions and cellars, workshops and kitchens, dining halls and training rooms. Gontalgrim had, before the escape of the primordial, been larger than Mithril Hall, Citadel Adbar, and Citadel Felbar combined. A glorious homeland for Clan Delzoon.
"I lost me count,"
Brunner announced when they were nearly halfway through the vast chamber. Hands on hips, he stared at the metal placard on the nearest column and shook his head.
23, Drizzt said, and all eyes turned to the drow. "That is the 23rd plate in the hall."
He said it with such certainty, and with Drizzt being ever reliable, no one doubted him. But all heads turned back the way they'd come, astonished to realize that they had passed so many of the giant columns. Indeed, the chamber was vast, with a ceiling out of sight in the shadows above. Brunner shook his head, looked left and right, then turned and pointed to the center column next in line.
"Middle plate, 2 dozen in," he announced.
And he walked up to the plate with all confidence, both in the knowledge he had gained from the magical throne and in Drizzt's count, and grasped its edge, easily pulling it open and revealing the alcove behind, which was different from the previous six, both shallower and higher. Brunner stuck his head in and glanced up, and in the distance far above, likely at the apex of the column itself, he saw a familiar green glow.
"Tendril,"
he remarked triumphantly. In went the bowl, the 7th of 10, and Jarlaxle moved up and handed him a vial. With the appropriate incantation, Brunner emptied the magical water into the bowl and watched the swirl as the elemental took shape. Almost immediately, the tendril's magic grabbed it.
"No others in this hall," Brunner announced, closing the placard door. "Next one south."
"Onward then," said Dahlia, moving past him, but Brunner was quick to correct her.
"South," he explained. "That's to the left."
Dahlia shrugged helplessly, and the dwarves and Jarlaxle led the way to a door at the side of the room, while Drizzt fell in with Dahlia.
"How can he know?" Dahlia asked.
"The throne, somehow," Drizzt replied.
"Not the layout of the complex," Dahlia clarified. How can any of you know which way is south and which way north?"
Drizzt smiled at her and nodded. He would have answered if he knew the answer. Creatures of the Underdark just knew such things, felt them innately.
"Perhaps it is the pull of the heavenly bodies above," he offered. "As the sun and moon cross the sky, perhaps their energy is felt even down here."
"I don't feel it,"
the elf replied with a sour look.
Drizzt grinned wider. "When you are above and wish to determine the direction, how do you do it?"
Dahlia looked at him with a wrinkled brow.
"You look to the sky, or the horizon if it's familiar," said Drizzt. "You know where the sun rises and sets, and so you determine your 4 points based on that."
"But you can't know that down here."
Drizzt shrugged again.
"When you're in the forest on a dark night, is not your hearing more keen?"
"That's different."
"Is it?"
Dahlia started to reply, but stopped, and stopped walking, too. She stared at the drow for a few heartbeats.
"You may find that after a while in the Underdark, you will come to sense direction as easily as you do in the world above," Drizzt said.
"Who would wish to spend any more time in the Underdark than we have already?"
The snide remark, and the short manner in which Dahlia had delivered it, caught Drizzt by surprise. He thought to tell her about all the beautiful things that could be found in the subterranean world beneath Faerun. Even Menzo Berenzon, which Dahlia, as a surface elf, could not likely see as anything but a slave, was a place of dazzling beauty. Drizzt had chosen the surface world as his home, and truly he loved the stars and even the sunshine, though for years it had pained his sensitive eyes. He found beauty in the forests and the waterways, in the clouds and the rolling fields, and in the grandeur of the mountains. But there was no less beauty to be found below, he knew, though it didn't often occur to him. He had rarely been in the Underdark in the last half century, and perhaps because of that fact, he had come to see it differently. He appreciated its beauty, both dwarf-worked and natural. He didn't tell any of that to Dahlia, however. She was at a disadvantage there, out of her element and surrounded by four companions who were not out of theirs. She didn't like that, Drizzt realized, and in looking at her as she again walked beside him, he saw a vulnerability in her. She had started the wrong way before being corrected by Brunner. She didn't know which direction was which. Her perfect armor had revealed a seam, after all. And in that seam, Drizzt noted a scar, an old and deep wound, a flicker of pain behind the always intense gleam of her blue eyes, a hesitance in her always confident stride, a defensive curl of her always squared shoulders. His intrigue surprised him. Her appeal at that moment overwhelmed him. Of course he'd marveled at the unusual beauty of the elf, particularly at the allure of her deadly fighting dance. But something more had presented itself, something endearing, something interesting.
"Pull it down! Pull it down!"
Stokely Silverstream commanded his dwarves. And the crack team did just that, hauling their ropes from either side and pinning the large red lizard to the floor. Up ahead, more dwarves, aided by the ghosts, battled the salamanders, but the dwarves' victory over their enemy's hidden weapon, a 20-foot-long, voracious, fearsome fire lizard, had sealed the larger victory. Stokely himself walked up and dispatched the monster, though it took several heavy blows from his axe to accomplish the task. By the time he and the rear guard caught up to the others, the fighting had ended. Dead and wounded salamanders littered the wide, steamy tunnel, along with three of Stokely's boys. The two priests accompanying the score of warriors went to work furiously, but one of those dwarves died there in the deep corridor of Gontalgrim, and one of the other two had to be carried along. But on the dwarves went, undeterred, following the ghosts and their destiny. Barely an hour later, still before their midday meal, they heard more noise coming from a side tunnel, a force moving down at them. Stokely stared ahead uncertainly. Perhaps they could outrun the elemental kin, but if they tried and ran into more resistance ahead, they'd be trapped.
"Dig in your heels, me boys,"
the dwarf leader told his fellows.
"More to kill!"
Not a dwarf complained, faces set grimly, weapons turning under white knuckles. The few ghosts that had silently led them from Icewind Dale drifted up the tunnel to meet the incoming force, but no sounds of battle echoed down at Stokely's crew. Just a call and a cheer.
"Mirabar!"
And out they came, 20, an elite squad of the Shield of Mirabar.
"Well met!"
Stokely and others called back, and both sides knew great relief, for both groups had known battle after battle with minions of the Primordial for the last several days.
"Stokely Silverstream of Icewind Dale at your service," the leader from the north greeted.
An old graybeard stepped forward from the ranks of Mirabaran dwarves.
"Icewind Dale," he asked. "Be ye battlehammers, then?"
"Aye, and well met," Stokely replied. "Mithril Hall's our older home, and Gontalgrim's older still."
"Torgar Hammerstriker at your service, and well met indeed, cousin," said the graybeard. "For 20 years I called Mithril Hall me home, went in service to King Brunner, Moradin kiss him, and served King Baenak afore Mirabar called me home."
"You were there when King Brunner fell?"
"No bell can sing the tune sad enough," Torgar replied, "and heavy weighed the stones of his grave, a dark day in Mithril Hall."
Stokely nodded, but said nothing more at that time other than,
A dark day for all dwarfkin.
Perhaps he would discuss the end of King Brunner at length with Torgar later on. Protocol demanded discretion when discussing the death ruse of an abdicating dwarf king, but so many years removed, the whispers would not be out of order.
Torgar! Came a cry from the side. By Obul's ugly arse!
Torgar spotted the shouting dwarf, and his face lit up with recognition and with fired memories of an old war.
Could that be ye there?
The Mirabaran leader called back.
Or am I seeing more ghosts than I thinked?
It was no ghost. Drizzt rolled ahead and to the right, ignoring the salamander he had just disengaged. He came to his feet, scimitars leading the way into the last pair of beasts, just as he heard a sickly splat behind him, then a grunt and a thump, as the leading salamander crumbled to the floor. His parallel blades worked opposite circles, left hand under to the left, right hand under to the right, each wrapping back over spears, and with a powerful exhale, Drizzt threw his weapons and the spears out wide to either side and abruptly stopped his charge, leaning back and leaping up, double-kicking the two salamanders directly in front of him. The drow landed flat on his back, but his muscles moved so perfectly, arcing and snapping straight, that it seemed to any onlookers, and certainly to his two surprised opponents, as if some unknown counterweight had lifted him right back to his feet. His scimitars struck left and right, taking the throat from the beast to his right and gashing the shoulder of the other. And still, with help from Icing Death, Drizzt ignored the blistering heat that radiated from the beasts. The wounded salamander scrambled to put some ground between itself and the drow, trying to realign its weapon and find some measure of defense. Before Drizzt could pursue, another form flew past from on high. Dahlia descended from her vault with a flying kick to the side of the monster's head, throwing it to the ground. As she landed, straddling it, the elf woman sent her long staff into a sudden spin, then drove it straight down and through the creature. When the metal struck the stone beneath, Koza's needle let loose a blast of powerful lightning. Holding it in one extended hand, her other arm out wide the other way, Dahlia seemed to bask in that energy, that power. She threw her head back, her eyes closed and her mouth wide, an expression of pure ecstasy on her fair face. Drizzt couldn't tear his eyes from her. If another enemy had crept in and charged at him, he surely would have been cut down. Dahlia held the pose for a long while, and Drizzt stared at her through it all. "We have a problem," came a call, Jarlaxle's voice breaking the trance of both.
"He couldn't summon the elemental?" Drizzt asked.
"The bowl is in place," Jarlaxle replied. 8 of 10. But the 9th placard is destroyed, as is the alcove behind it."
Drizzt and Dahlia exchanged a concerned glance, then followed Jarlaxle from the corridor and through the few small rooms back to the wider hall where Brunner and Athrogate waited. Waited with hands on hips, staring at an impenetrable pile of rubble and a collapsed wall.
"Was here," Brunner insisted. "Ain't no more."
"What does this mean?" Dahlia asked. "Can we not put the beast back in its hole?"
"Bah! But 9 water monsters'll do it then," Athrogate bellowed. The others looked at him. "Ain't no choice to it," he answered with strength and conviction.
To the side of him lay 2 dead salamanders, both swatted down by Athrogate when first they'd entered the room. To put a true exclamation point to the end of his proclamation, the dwarf spat upon the dead creatures, then gave a hearty, "Bwahaha!" and thumped King Brunner on the shoulder. And to Drizzt's surprise, Brunner thumped Athrogate right back.
"Come on, then," King Brunner declared. "The devil worshippers can't stop us. The fire worshippers can't stop us. And not this this volcano beast'll be stopping us neither. I got me 1 more water monster to set and a big lever to pull, and let all the world know that Gontalgrim's ghosts'll be resting easy once more."
And off they went. It did Drizzt's heart good to see his old friend so animated and boisterous and full of fire, and he watched Brunner for a long while. Gradually, though, his gaze slipped back to Dahlia, who walked quietly at his side. He noticed then 3 marks in her right ear, just above the single diamond stud set there. 3 missing earrings? There was a story there, Drizzt knew, and he was surprised once again by the enigmatic woman and by his own reaction to her, when he realized how much he wanted to hear that tale. The sound of water rushing over their heads had all the Ashmedai looking up with alarm.
"The magic returns," Valindra cried. "The host tower answers the call of our enemies."
"What does it mean?"
the Ashmedai commander begged.
"It means that you will fail, and your dread ring will not sing the praise of Asmodeus."
The Ultima Touche, the pit fiend, growled, and all save Valindra shrank back from the sheer power in the devil's angry voice.
"Nay,"
Valindra corrected, and she held forth her scepter to silence any further dissent from the fiend.
"It means that we must press on with more speed."
"Straight to the forge,"
offered the Ashmedai leader, who had been there those years before when Sylora had arrived to bolster the faltering Dahlia. A huge bat came rushing up the corridor at them then, and flipped over itself in the air right before Valindra and Bealtamatush, elongating as it came around to assume the human form of Dorcray once more, his face a mask of concern.
"The water,"
Valindra warned, but Dorcray shook his head.
"Our enemies block the way," he explained. "The Primordial's minions, not Dahlia's troop." "Then they die," Bealtamatush roared, and all the zealots cheered.
But Dorcray was still shaking his head.
"They have a dragon," he explained. "A red dragon."
With a stomp of his clawed foot that gouged the floor and shook the walls of the corridor, the pit fiend stormed away. And how the cultists scrambled to get out of his path. And when one was too slow, the devil swatted her aside with his great fiery mace, mulching her shoulder, igniting her leathers and hair, and throwing her into the wall with a sickening crunch of her every bone. She slumped into an almost formless mass of blood and burning flesh. And the Ashmedai cheered. Chapter 23. Josie Puddles. Dahlia gripped her tri-staff tightly, ready to spring out and throttle whomever or whatever approached the small room in which she waited with the dwarves. She relaxed when Drizzt came through the archway.
"Our enemies are close," he warned her, "ahead of us in every corridor and chamber."
From just outside the room's other door, the one through which the five had entered, Jarlaxle replied, "And they're not far behind as well."
"We're to be fighting again, then," said Dahlia, and she didn't show a hint of regret or fear at that thought.
She nodded to Drizzt, who returned her confident look.
"All the way to the forge of Gontalgrim," Athrogate agreed. "If 100 lizard boys stand in me way, 100 lizard boys'll die. Eh, King Brunner?"
he added, and he turned and slapped Brunner on the shoulder. Brunner, busy inspecting the wall, just grunted.
"We should move on swiftly," Drizzt said. "We'll not want those behind catching us while we're fighting those ahead."
He moved back to the archway, Dahlia right behind him. Jarlaxle entered from across the way and moved to join them. Then Athrogate joined as well, after another clap on Brunner's shoulder. But Brunner didn't even grunt in response, one hand lifted to feel the texture of the carved relief on the chamber's stone wall.
"Brunner," Drizzt called, "we must move."
The dwarf waved his hand at them dismissively and studied the wall more intently. His mind drifted back across the centuries to the revelations of the magical throne. "This is the room," he thought. "It has to be the room, if I can only find the catch." Noise from the tunnel they had just ascended entered the hall.
"Brunner,"
Drizzt said, but more quietly. He rushed over to join the dwarf.
"Come,"
he bade his friend, and he put his hand on Brunner's strong shoulder.
"Our enemy's near. We must be gone."
"Aye, be gone,"
the irritated dwarf grumbled back. He pressed his hand more strongly on the wall, hoping he wasn't about to spring a deadly trap. Was it possible that the centuries of idleness had ruined the mechanisms? The thought rattled Brunner. It was Gontalgrim, after all, the pinnacle of dwarven civilization.
"Dwarves build things to last," he
he said aloud.
Build what?
Finally, Brunner did look up at Drizzt, and he motioned his chin back to the wall and stepped aside. Drizzt moved in quickly. He wasn't exactly sure what he might be looking for. Brunner had revealed nothing of the reasons for his interest in that particular bas-relief, and Gontalgrim teemed with such carvings. The drow stared at the carving for a few heartbeats. The others soon came over, pleading with the pair to lead the way out of the small chamber, which was seeming more and more like a trap or a tomb than anything else. Drizzt shook his head, not to answer those complaints, but simply because he saw no anomalies in the relief, not a hint of anything out of place. He closed his eyes, spread both his hands up in front of him, and gently ran his fingers along the wall. The drow opened his eyes, and a curious grin came upon him.
"What do ye know?" Brunner asked.
Drizzt removed one hand from the wall, then all but one finger of his other hand. He moved the remaining contact up a bit, then slowly slid it back to its original place, and his smile grew with confidence. Brunner lifted his hand, and Drizzt moved his own aside. The dwarf closed his eyes and felt for the spot.
"Clever dwarf," he whispered, referring to the craftsman who had constructed that particular mechanism.
There was no seam. There was no mark of color or shape. In that one spot, at one point no bigger than the tip of a stubby dwarf finger, the wall was not made of stone, but of metal. Brunner turned his finger to get his nail against the spot and pushed hard.
"Lead," he announced.
"It's a cover plate," said Drizzt.
"Aye, one to be melted."
They both turned to Jarlaxle, who always seemed to have all the answers.
"Melted?" Drizzt asked, skeptical. "We could build a fire and heat some makeshift poker, but we've not the time to bring something to that temperature."
"What's behind it?" asked Dahlia.
"Our escape, if I'm reading their faces right," Athragate said. Brunner looked at the wall and at Drizzt, who seemed just as perplexed as to how they might get through it. Back in the hall, more sounds echoed, their enemies obviously nearing the chamber.
"Mark it," Drizzt instructed.
He stepped away, and as he did, he revealed his plan as he slid Talmaril from his shoulder. Brunner glanced around and patted his pockets and his pack, trying to figure out how he might do that. He produced one of his maps and tore a piece from its corner, plopping it into his mouth. He rushed back to the spot in front of the wall and gently felt the surface again, chewing all the while. When he had the spot, he spat the wet parchment into his hand, pressed it into place, and stepped aside. Drizzt already had an arrow fitted to the bowstring. He drew level and took careful and steady aim. He fired, and a flash of lightning illuminated the room. The enchanted missile hit the mark. It melted the paper first, then drilled right through the lead cover and right into the catch behind, ruining it forever. Both drow and dwarf knew it to be a risk, for in doing that, had Drizzt also forever sealed the secret door? They heard rocks sliding somewhere behind the wall, though whether that was a promising sign or a portent of doom, they couldn't be sure. But then the stone groaned before them as the counterweights took hold in some unseen mechanism. The hatch fell in slightly, revealing the outline of a dwarf-sized doorway. Dust slipped from all edges, and a musty smell, an old smell, filled their nostrils. With a great groan of protest, the secret door slid aside, disappearing into the right-hand wall.
"How did you know?" Dahlia asked, breathless.
"Damn smart throne, eh?" Athrogate said with a giggle. "Onward and quickly," Jarlaxle bade them. Drizzt started for the opening, but Brunner held out a strong arm and kept the drow at bay. The dwarf king led the way into the deeper, long-unused corridor, a tunnel that became a steep staircase only a few feet inside. Last in was Athrogate, who shoved the heavy stone door back in place behind them. Down they went, Brunner making a swift pace on the treacherous stone stair. He didn't think of the danger of falling. He knew what was coming. The stairs spilled out into a narrow corridor, and the narrow corridor spilled out into a wider chamber, lit in orange. The Forge of Gontalgrim. Brunner skidded to a stop, eyes wide, mouth agape.
"Ye see it, Elf," he managed to whisper.
"I see it, Brunner," Drizzt replied in hushed and reverent tones.
One did not have to be a Delzoon dwarf to understand the solemn significance of the place and the majesty of it. As if being pulled by unseen forces, Brunner drifted toward the large central forge, and the